From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 13th day of May, 2021. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Matt Bennett at agmarket.net. We'll ask him how that closure of the bridge across the Mississippi at Memphis will cause problems for corn and soybean exports and what the marketplace has been thinking about that over the last 24 hours, and we'll take a look at the weather forecast too. Mike Tenor is here from T-Storm Weather in Chicago. Oh, and Gary Schnitke will join us at least for a little bit, a quick snippet from him, as it's related to the price of corn, trendline yields in the state of Illinois, and the chance of corn being above or below $6 a bushel by the time we get to December. We'll do all of that right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
This quick note before we get to the numbers, Illinois Extension is looking for a full-time farm mechanic to be based at the Ewing Demonstration Center. That's in the southern part of the state. There's a May 31 application deadline, and you can find the details on our website at willag.org, willag.org. July corn for the day finished 40 cents lower, down the limit at 674 and three quarters. December at 558 and a quarter, 34 and three quarters on its settlement price. And July beans at 1584, down 58 and a half cents. November there at 1396 and a half, 47 and a quarter cents lower for the afternoon. Bean meal futures down 27 and a half, the oil down 62 cents, and soft red winter wheat at 701 and a quarter, 27 cents lower on the day. Matt Bennett from agmarket.net now joins us to discuss what happened in Chicago. It was an ugly day, and I don't know whether we have an indication what really happened over the noon hour when the 40 cent or limit moves came up and the corn. Were you watching closely enough to have an idea?
Yeah, I mean, in all honesty, nobody seems to have an explanation that I've heard just yet. But I know that there was a lot of volume that came in all at once. And so that would lead me to believe that, you know, it might have been one fund or one heavy trader, so to speak, which I'm not talking one person, obviously. We're talking a lot of volume hit the market all at once and kind of brought the corn market off the limit move, which certainly was something that was nice to see considering what we were doing at the time.
Did you get much traffic from farmers? Were they worried today? Did they want to know whether they should finish up their old crop sales? And what kind of advice did you have for them?
Yeah, we definitely, you know, obviously are going to have a lot of concerned producers. I know some producers had checked with me yesterday after the market and, you know, were frustrated, you know, that they quote unquote missed the market. And I said, you know, in all reality, you could sell halfway down this thing and still be way better off than most producers when you're looking at cash, because we all know the fair amount of cash was sold last fall. And then on the new crop side of things, you know, we closed yesterday there at 593. And then, of course, here today, you close, you know, another 33, 34 cents below that. But regardless, I mean, you're still talking about a decent corn price today that's 559. I just don't know how that's a bad price if we look at our historical situation. And so as a producer, I know we talk about this a lot, but we have to be keeping our perspective in this marketplace, because it's not going to be easy to market at high prices, any easier than what it is at low prices. And in fact, it might be even tougher because we've got more profit margins on the table that we're trying to latch onto or not let get away. So let's just keep our perspective and not get too beat up over one day.
Yeah, so as we were making our way through this, and I think most of the analysts that I talked to were of this mind, and you know, that you get an opportunity, and Daryl Good had taught both you and I this over the decades, to generally sell in that March, April time frame, maybe into May, but then you get a setback as we really go from old crop to new crop pricing, and we've got a really good start to the planting season for corn. And now is it just setting back again? and waiting for potential weather rally in the June-July timeframe, or do producers need to be more active in this trade than that?
Well, my personal opinion, you know, we've talked about this a lot, I think, in the last few weeks, is that I wanted to get to, you know, 25 to 40% sold, depending on where the producers, you know, comfort level was. Now, once your crop's up and going and you feel good about things, I think you can maybe start to push that a little bit. But this year especially, you know, we've been preaching flexibility because, you know, if the market so far has been any indication, volatility could be intense. And so if we have a major weather issue over the summer time frame, I think we all know that you could see some intense fireworks. And so I guess what should producers be thinking about in here? I think the main thing is they got to continually look at, you know, how is this market impacting them? Not necessarily that we're 40, 60, 70 cents off the highs, because that's already the case with these corn. Let's not get hung up on that. Let's get hung up on, hey, how much money can I make if I have halfway normal yield at 559 basis of board? And the answer is significantly more than what we've made the last few years. So it's a very tough situation. My thought process is that the highs are in for now. You're probably going to need some summer weather to push up into new highs. But if you do get this heat to come in next week, crop conditions start out maybe in the so-so category. We all know it's been cool and dry in areas. And so I think emergence, like for instance, Iowa hasn't been the best. But you know what? I think that all in all, it's been a good enough spring that if we have really good weather this summer, and you don't get a weather scare, you're probably going to struggle to make new highs and de-score.
So part of your point there, and you mentioned volatility a number of times, crop insurance is set in part, premiums that are, on volatility. That's why crop insurance premiums were higher than usual this year. Volatility also gives you wider swings in the marketplace, and the opportunities might come more often, though, as you look at it, there could be some real problematic days like today that show up more often, too, I would suppose.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the thing is volatility is a lot of fun whenever the market's going up. And when it's not going up, it's not much fun whatsoever. But, you know, this market has afforded a lot of us some great opportunities to hedge off some risk. The thing about it is if it's a true hedge, in a market like this, you know, 450 looked good until it didn't, and then 550 looked good until it didn't. And quite frankly, a $6 put didn't look all that great about five trading sessions ago, but by golly, it looks good today. And so the thing, once again, is that sometimes when we're doing risk management, you know, we don't want to get hung up on the day-to-day so much as what the big picture is offering us. You know, if we're willing to spend the money on a put option that's aggressive, sometimes you got to spend the money on it. You know, and then hope like heck that you don't need it and the market keeps going up. But, you know, if you do need it, you're going to sleep a heck of a lot better at night whenever you see the type of market action we got here on Thursday.
And before I let you go, what do we know about the problems the bridge over the Mississippi River at Memphis, Tennessee, may continue to cause over time? Is that a big worry for the export market, or is it a short-term problem?
Yeah, it depends on who you ask, Todd. But the best information I've gotten on this today, you know, is that essentially you're not going to have, of course, any traffic going over the top of that bridge, but you may have traffic going through. And so we've heard today that they're going to allow some barge traffic through. I don't think anything's set in stone, but one of the thoughts that is going through people's minds is that they may actually work to repair the bridge for 8 to 12 hours a day, and they may allow traffic for the other part of the day. So if that happens to be the case, I think they can get this orchestrated to where maybe it's not going to be near as bad of a situation as what we all feared that whenever we first found out about it there yesterday.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks, Todd.
That's Matt Bennett. He is with AgMarket.net. In today's agricultural news, U.S. Trade Ambassador Catherine Tai has pushed back against GOP claims that new trade deals are on the back burner for the Biden administration. She was challenged by the top Republican on the Finance Committee, Mike Crapo, to show the Biden trade agenda is not putting deals with the U.K. and Kenya on the back burner. And Ty had this answer.
It should be clear that trade is not on the back burner. For your question specifically on the UK and Kenya, I think it was in my first 2 weeks on the job that I've had conversations with my counterparts in both countries.
But Ty described only a review of how those talks can meet Biden's Build Back Better goals after first getting through the pandemic, while not answering if the White House would seek to extend fast-track power to speed a UK deal through Congress. On China, and whether or not to continue the some $370 billion worth of tariffs that have been imposed on goods imported from that country that have hurt U.S. industries, including agriculture, Ty says they're setting up for a quick review of them.
And the tariffs and the exclusion process will be a critical component of that review, through which we will be soliciting robust feedback from the public, from Congress.
And on USMCA?
I will enforce the new standards, follow through on our commitments, and use the agreement to ensure that Canada and Mexico do too.
Including to deal with Mexico's bans on those pending on GMO corn and glyphosate. Ty also announced the U.S. has triggered a USMCA review by Mexico of a crackdown on labor organizing at a GM factory. Well, let's move from trade policy to trade flow. The U.S. Coast Guard yesterday reported that it had issued a waterway restriction on May the 11th, the day before, closing the lower Mississippi River to all vessel traffic between mile markers 736 and 737 due to a crack discovered on the center span of the I-40 bridge in Memphis, Tennessee. Now, the U.S. Coast Guard says there are currently 16 vessels, or were at the time, and a total of 229 barges in the queue, with no word on when the traffic would be allowed to resume. The Coast Guard, it says, is currently working with the Arkansas Department of Transportation, Tennessee Department of Transportation, and the river industry stakeholders on this developing situation. The Coast Guard says the river closure was implemented, quote, out of an abundance of caution and to ensure the safety of the maritime environment and surrounding communities, unquote. And finally today, this on COVID-19. One of the sectors of the ag community hit especially hard during the spread of COVID-19 last year were meatpacking plants nationwide. But according to the University of California, Davis, the impact was much more severe than initially thought. Researchers there say an estimated 334,000 cases of COVID-19 are attributable to meatpacking plants, resulting in $11.2 billion in economic damage nationwide. And the lead author says those numbers may be on the conservative side. Tina Saitone says knowing exactly how many cases each plant is responsible for is difficult because the numbers are determined at the county level and not at the plant level. And she makes note that some have said in light of the pandemic, the industry should move to smaller meatpacking operations. However, Saitone cautions those advocating for smaller plants and that such a move will come at a price.
The current system has developed to operate very efficiently and provide animal-based protein to consumers at a relatively reasonable price. And so if we move to a smaller scale, more geographically dispersed system, we're going to actually be adding costs back into the meatpacking sector. Evolved to eliminate them.
Saitone added, rather than moving in that direction, it may be best for consumers in the industry to consider automation and technology. Along those lines, she says their research shows broiler plants had lower COVID-19 transmission rates compared to beef and pork facilities. However, the research did not look at that specifically.
We suspect that the smaller, more homogeneous structure physically of broilers that allows those plants to utilize more automation and technology allowed that sector to be more resilient and incorporate kind of social distancing and other protocols that limit the spread of COVID.
Again, the research was done at the University of California, Davis. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. Well, there's a 9% chance the price of corn will drop $2 by the time harvest rolls around. and about a 20% chance that'll happen for soybeans. There's an online tool anyone can use to evaluate the probability of different prices at the expiration of a CME Group futures contract. It's called the FarmDoc Price Discovery Tool and is powered by the National Center for Supercomputing on the University of Illinois campus. Illinois Extension agricultural economist Gary Schnitke used it when December corn futures were near the early May highs above $6. Well, the price discovery tool on May 10 indicated for corn the chance of more than a 50-cent decline from the $6.09 price at the time was 43% by the time December futures go off the board. The chance of more than a dollar decline, 30%, and more than a $2 decline, 9%. You can put those declines in an historical perspective, too, using actual price data. The historical occurrence of a 50-cent or more price decline is 9 out of 36 years, or 25% of the time. That's far less than this year's projected 43% chance. The other price scenarios follow a similar pattern. The price discovery tool uses option price volatility to guide its prediction, and this year that volatility is high. On the day the story was written, May 13, there was an equal chance December corn futures would expire above or below $5.58 a bushel. This is an interesting number because in the USDA May New Crop Supply and Demand Table, USDA predicted the season's average cash price, generally represented by December futures during the growing season, would be $5.70. Now that's using trendline yields, which, given the planting pace in the state of Illinois and normal weather from here to harvest, would be on target, says Illinois' Gary Schnitke.
Overall, in 2021, we're above average, and given where we're at percent planted right now, you would be saying that we were looking at least trend yields in Illinois. Obviously, the thing that could impact that is bad weather from here and on out, but just given where planting progress here is at Illinois on corn, we would be saying that we would be looking at least at trend yields.
Well, USDA puts the national trend line corn yield at 179.5 bushels to the acre. Right now, there's an equal chance the price of that corn this fall will be, according to the U of I's price discovery tool, $5.58 a bushel. You may run a calculation anytime you'd like on your own. Search Google for the phrase price distribution tool. It's a Thursday afternoon. Don't forget that we'll record our Commodity Week program about 3 o'clock today, posted to our website by about 6 tonight. Our panelist will include the chief analyst at Gas Buddy. His name is Patrick DeHaan. We'll start out with the situation related to Colonial Penn and what that has meant over the past week or so. And, of course, we'll have him take a look forward into the summer driving season as it's related to ethanol usage and mileage and gasoline consumption across the United States. Now, let's turn our attention to the weather forecast. Mike Tenner is here. He's with T-Storm Weather in Chicago. Good afternoon to you, Michael. Thanks for taking the time with us today. Can you start for me in South America as it's related to dry conditions in the Safrina or second crop corn-growing areas? Has there been any relief there?
There really hasn't. They had a few showers in the southern areas yesterday, but most of the growing belt didn't receive very much rain at all, and in fact, a large majority of it was completely dry. Even though we did see a couple of locations that saw more than an inch of rain, all of that was in the far eastern areas of Paraná, and that's east of where the corn is produced. So pretty much the same situation exists now that existed before that event, and that the whole region was turning dry. Our proprietary data essentially shows that 33% of that corn crop essentially had little to no rain over the last 60 days. And that's pretty dry, as you can well imagine. And there's no rain in the forecast for at least another 7 to 8 days. Once we get into next weekend, around May 22 and 23, a cool front will move through that should trigger some thunderstorms in different areas, and that would certainly help them out a little bit. But at some point, you have to wonder, when do they need this rain? At some point, the rain is too late. It's certainly too late for some of their crop. We want to see a lot of rain, and we want to see it right now. So we're still looking at a rain chance, yes, but it's pretty far out into the future. and it will be pretty warm to hot right in advance of those rains that might happen again pretty far off into the future. So pretty much not a lot is changing, but there is that rain chance out there around 10 days from now.
Here in the United States, we've been talking about dry conditions in the Dakotas, part of Minnesota, particularly North Dakota, and some of the spring wheat growing regions. Have conditions changed there, and is there real reason for worry?
I think there's a lot of reason for worry, and the main reason is that if you just look at the coverage of dryness over the last 6 months, it includes 82% of the U.S. spring wheat crop. And just to put that in perspective, we have data going back to 2015, and there's no other day in that entire period that looked anything like this. And that's the way this growing season is starting. Now, we know there's not much rain on the horizon over the next week. In fact, most of these areas will be completely dry for another 7 to 8 days. There is a chance for some rain after that. The U.S. is going to turn warmer about a week from now, and that will shift the main storm track a little bit further to the north. And that certainly could bring some rain to the spring wheat belt. But our larger concern is that if you look at the type of La Nina that we're exiting at the moment, two of the three that were similar were much drier than normal over the 60-day period starting on June 1st. So there is precedent for dryness to continue going all the way through the summer. Now, whether or not that happens, we'll have to wait and see, but just given how dry it is now and that there is historical support for it to continue, you have to have your alarm bells ringing at the moment for spring wheat.
And what about for the rest of the Corn Belt? What do the next 2 weeks look like, and what's your assessment of the start to the growing season?
Well, planting is so far ahead of schedule, it's hard to be all that worried because most of the U.S. corn and soybean crop will end up being planted in the fairly ideal window, which, you know, ends around mid-May to late May. So everything is being planted in a nice and timely fashion. It's been a little bit cool, but it does warm up as we get into next week and beyond. So we think the coolness story is going to come to an end. But before we get to the end of the coolness story, there's a lot of rain coming up for the southern half of the U.S. corn and soybean belt, and especially in the hard red winter wheat belt. So it is going to turn a lot wetter with this transition to a warmer period over the next week. But all these rains are going to essentially form along and south of Interstate 80. Those areas to the north that would really benefit from the rain aren't going to see any. Now, it's still May, so it's not really the time of year where you're going to get overly excited about something like this. But at some point, we'll need to see some of these rains shift down to the north. And we certainly think that there'll be a major improvement in soil moisture for the hard red winter wheat crop, and that southern corn and soybean areas, while maybe not turning wet, will turn wetter as we move into the end of next week.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.
Yep, great being here.
Mike Tenura is with T-Storm Weather in Chicago, joined us on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media.